Good evening. I think I've met everyone. Thank you, old and new, for coming out on this warm summer night. I want to talk a little bit about being whole, being complete, wholeness. I'll use this this 9th century Chinese poem. The valley streams are the long, broad tongue of the Buddha. The form and colors of the mountains are his body. I've listened all night and heard 10,000 sutras. What more do I have to add? The valley streams are the Buddha's teaching, his long, broad tongue. The forms of the mountains and the highways and the beaches and the chairs and the altars and the candles are nothing but the body of the Buddha. And it made me wonder what the sounds of guns and bullets in Gilroy and Dayton and El Paso, what teaching was that? What words, what ideas, what concepts was the Buddha trying to tell us with the sounds of the guns and the bullets? Dogen did a whole commentary on this poem about the valley streams and the colors of the mountains and he called it the Mountains and Waters Sutra, where he goes into great detail about how all phenomena around us are the teaching of the Buddha, are the body of the Buddha, are nothing but the Buddha. Me, other people, you are nothing but the constant lesson, the constant teaching, the constant presence of Buddha, mind and body. He starts off that essay on the Mountains and Waters Sutra by saying the mountains and waters right now are the manifestation of the old Buddhas. So everything right now is nothing but the body and mind and teaching of the Buddhas, all the same, and yet we can tell a little difference between the altar and the chair and between you and me. But we're all the body and mind, the teaching of the Buddha. Right now, the manifestation of the old Buddhas. with my when I forget that, and I'm just trying to think, you know, what's going to happen here with my conventional mind thinking about the guns, the bullets, the philosophies, I get kind of confused. What's the solution? You know, I don't see many guns and bullets in my life. I can be kind of rattled for a while, and then I don't even think about it for a while. This is our karmic consciousness. That wants to figure it out, wants a solution, but also can retreat to a place of safety pretty quickly. Maybe if I just don't think about it. Kilroy was pretty close, but it's not Santa Cruz. So this is our conventional karmic consciousness. But when we're willing to hear and see and be with everything as nothing but the body and mind of Buddha, if we're really paying attention to those 10,000 sutras, those 10,000 Buddha lessons that we hear every day, every hour. If we're looking at the world with our Dharma eye, we listen a little more closely. We're not such strangers. We're paying attention a little bit more. This is a Dharma lesson. This is the Buddha giving a lesson. I want to hear this very closely. I want to pay attention. I want to be more intimate with this. I want to sort of settle into this a little bit more. So we have that option. And I think we practice here. We sit here for 40 minutes, three times a day. We do weekend retreats so that we can get comfortable looking at all phenomena, looking at our world, looking at our lives as nothing but Buddha lessons. Buddha's mind and body. We try to get comfortable. For the most part, appreciate getting a little bit closer, learning something a little bit different. The world is a little more interesting when we can pay close attention, for the most part. And then we hear those guns and bullets, and we're pretty afraid. And maybe we have to tell ourselves over and over again, what was that lesson? What was the Buddha saying there? Can I just follow my breath? Can I put that fear down for a little longer, for a little bit, and try to hear the valley streams and see the colors of the mountains and settle in to this teaching, just like we're kind of trying to settle in on this warm night onto our cushions. When we can look at everything as the great matter, life and death, Buddha's body and mind, how do we respond? We might respond differently than if we think that this is just a problem that happens in Dayton, Ohio, or El Paso, Texas, or way across the county in Gilroy. We might respond differently if we saw everything in the great matter. We might settle in and get closer. I was just on this long hike with a group of people, and we climbed high, and it was wet and it was rainy and we were all cold, and we certainly appreciated the view from the top of the mountain where we were aiming for. But then we had this 2-hour hike to get back home, to get down off the mountain in this wet and cold, and fast people took off fast, and middle speeded people were in the middle and slow people were at the end. So basically, after a while, I was feeling like I was there alone, but never really far from other people, or the hike leader was really paying attention to everybody, and you know, he wanted to come up at the end to maybe scoop people up or get us going a little faster. So he kind of gave us encouraging words as we passed by him to go down this long, wet, 2-hour hike back to the base. And he told me, Patrick, concentrate on every step. And those were words I understood, because I've been here sitting for 40 minutes, 3 times a day, and going to weekend retreats. Those were words that I understood. And Dogen, in the Mountains and Waters Sutra, says, those that are in the mountains love the mountains. And he means are not apart, are not separate from the mountains. And when I was really looking at every step, so that I wouldn't slide and slip, I felt a little more sure-footed and confident. And there was no fear that, because I was paying attention. And I was, the flip side is that, as I said, you know, I'm going to be giving this Dharma talk. And I could really talk about this mountains and waters and being in these mountains. And sure enough, my ankle would turn on a slippery rock, and so I was really aware that there was sometimes I was just this kind of old California hippie that landed on this mountain and I just have to get down so that I can be a little warmer. I was really thinking of me and the mountain as, you know, something that I had to overcome the elements and just get on with it, just get down there where it was warm and safe. And then other times when hike leader was saying, Patrick, concentrate on every step. You know, that was when I was in love with the mountains, intimate with the mountains. I was just a part of the causes and conditions. You know, the trees were there. They were able to keep their footage on that slippery mountain. They were paying attention to the causes and conditions. There were sheep all over. They knew how to put their feet right down and get from the low pasture up to the high pasture. Those of us who loved the mountains that day were just paying attention to the great matter. We're just not separate from the rain, from the rocks, from the sheep, from the trees. We were all in love with the mountain. And settling into the Buddha body of the mountains and the valley streams. So that's our practice, is to remember this manifestation of the old Buddhas with every step. And when we take a misstep, that too is nothing but a sutra from the Buddhas, the old Buddhas. This being a part, and this being intimate, is not some meditative rarity where we can, or maybe I think there's even jokes about being one with everything. But it's not this rarity that you can only achieve. That you can only achieve after years of sitting, this remembering that we're nothing but the body and mind of Buddha. This practice is none other than the stark realization that I'm right in the middle of this effing mess, and what should I do now? Is to really feel ourselves in the mess of our life and the mess of our culture, and sometimes raise our head and look at the beautiful view and say, yes, what can I do now? What can possibly be done now? This Mountains and Waters Sutra is where a lot of us are looking at it because of the book and commentary on it by Shohaku Okamura, a Zen teacher from Indiana, who writes so well. And he says that that when we're actually willing to be in the middle of this mess, those are my words, not his words, when we're actually willing to hear sounds as Buddha's teaching and see objects as nothing but the body of the Buddha, when we're there, that's practice. That's the beginning of Buddhist practice. That's our Dharma eye. Excuse me, that's our mountain body, not separate from the mountain, still paying attention to every footfall. If that hike leader were to come up behind me and say, Patrick, are you cold? I'd be able to honestly say, yes, I am. But still, I wouldn't be separate from the mountain and the valley streams and the trees and the guns and the bullets. Yes, I'm afraid, and it's so sad. But how can I hear that as nothing but a sutra from the Buddha? This mountain body that I'm calling is the same as the Dharma eye. It's the same as this is Buddhist practice. This is our zazen. This is our meditation. This is our bodhisattva practice. To be intimate with all things, not to be separate, to be willing to be in the middle of this mess, and keep asking ourselves, what now? What do I do now? Maybe that's a question that a lot of us have been asking these last couple of weeks, and maybe a lot of us have said, I've got to look at this with that body that I know in meditation that is willing to hear all the sounds, that is willing to be here in the hot of the summer evening or the mornings when it's a lot cooler, that willingness to be in the middle of our lives completely. Maybe other people have said, I want to look at this world that we live in with my Dharma eyes. So any thoughts, any insights over these last couple of weeks that you may have had, please let's have a little discussion before we go out into the cooler air. Neti.
I have teachings about that book. even though you might not know what the details, you can trust that it's actually all followed in a very complex series of causes and conditions that resulted in that. And so it's sort of to be too shocked or too incredulous.
Yeah.
It's not actually very helpful. Much better to say, don't know all the causes and conditions, but I can trust that they were there.
Yeah.
I found that very helpful for lots of things.
Yeah.
When I don't expend energy on the shopping, confusion and incredulousness, I don't spend energy on that, I can kind of just settle into it. Makes sense, I don't like it, but it does make sense. And I don't know how it makes sense, but that's okay. It's helped me a lot. It frees me up more to follow on with what you're saying. What do I do now if I do something? What might that be?
Yeah.
I've got more energy for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. And you know, the Buddha talks about skillful means, that there's many ways to be skillful and to save all beings when we're in our mountain body, when we're looking at the world with our Dharma eyes. So there's not one good solution or one best solution. It's the solutions that come out of this mountain body, out of this appreciation for Buddha mind and body. Those are all skillful solutions to the great suffering in the world, the matter of life and death. Thank you. Shakti. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just to sort of keep on with this theme, when you find yourself saying, "Gee, I'm sort of shut down," that's almost like a mindfulness bell to say, "Was I listening to that sutra?" Maybe I can just sit a little bit today at the noontime sit and just really try to hear the sutra of my heart, the sutra of suffering beings, and see if it doesn't speak to me with a little more clarity. And as we've talked, as a lot of the people that talk on this stage say, you know, our sitting can be sort of good nutrition, can kind of revive us, can kind of open our hearts and feed our bodies. And so it's not a retreat. It's not the walk of shame to come here and say, I've got to practice harder because I'm kind of numb. It's saying, I need the nutrition of this practice. I need the vigor. Vigor is one of our bodhisattva practices, not the vigor of you know, Shakti, or the vigor of Patrick, the personal vigor, but the vigor of saying, I'm in the middle of this, and I'm ready to do something, so that this practice can invigorate us, and help us hear the words of the Buddha. I just recalled hearing is a big part of our compassion practice with Avalokiteshvara, Kuan Yin. She is always ready to hear the cries of the world, and ready to respond, not as some individual warrior, but as a bodhisattva who is just ready to hear the world and what it needs at all times. So this hearing with our Dharma bodies, with our mountain bodies, or with our Kuan Yin bodies, is really central to our practice. And sometimes we just need to sit and be nurtured to be able to hear that clearly. Thank you for your confession, your vow and confession. Please. Is the point you're making that maybe meditation is not the response that's needed?
No, it's not. It's not the point I'm making. It's And it might enable a stronger, clearer response, but it's not the full response.
Just to keep mixing Dharma lessons, some of the statues of the sculptures of the Kuan Yin have 11 faces on it, you know, ranging from, you know, this very, very parental, loving face to real angry demons. And all of those responses in the service of saving all beings, in the service of responding to the voice of the Buddha, to the suffering of beings, all of those faces and responses are how we relieve suffering and realize unsurpassed, complete, perfect enlightenment. So, thank you for your confession of anger, but it's right up there. It's right behind the altar there. All those 11 faces. All those 11 possibilities. Thank you, Richard. Liz? It makes me think about being in elementary school in the 50s, like I was. We had drills of getting under our desks when the atomic bomb would explode in Sinsheimer Elementary School, and so we had atomic bomb drills, and now they've got active shooter drills. Do they have active shooter drills at Mission Hill Junior High School, Martha? Isn't that? Yeah. So it's very. Just to be in, can we settle into this world, and can we meet gun owners with real curiosity and real, a lesson that I can learn. How can I hear that? Thank you. I think Yaro had her hand up, and then I saw your hand, Corinne.
Just a quick, I heard on the radio after I came back from Mountain and heard about what happened. It was an interview with, I believe it's Dylan Klebold's mother. He was the Columbine shooter, one of them. And in her life, she's made a vow to educate. She educated herself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she went through the shock, the horror,
oh, yeah,
the shame of everything that her own son did, and then made a vow to go out and become a part of an educational program in schools. And she specifically talked about how, even though it seems like, my God, there's shootings all the time in schools, she knows, because of this program she is involved with, that there are many shootings that have been avoided because they go in and they have programs with the kids, because kids are online on sites where other kids may be posting the terrible things that they're going to do. And adults don't even know where those places are.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's educating children in some kind of program that does that, so that kids are monitoring each other, mm-hmm, and then that they can go, you know, to whoever in the school.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we found online, and this person's really in trouble. And so that they've apparently prevented many school shootings already, just from kind of the fruits of that program.
Yeah.
So it just, she said that, you know, we tend to hear only about the failures, but she has witnessed the successes. And so, I don't know, whatever ways we can kind of support, you know, if we have children or grandchildren or, we all know people that have kids in school. Do whatever we can to kind of support those kind of programs to educate children from a young age, that if they've got, you know, mental health issues.
Yeah. What is
to reach out to them.
Yeah. What a skillful response she emerged out of the teaching that she received from her life.
Yeah.
Thank you. Corinne, why don't you finish us up so that we can get outside and
and I wasn't fairly successful. But what I realized was I could experience the pain and the joy of the breath at the same time. So it was like holding them both. Mm-hmm. And yet there isn't the both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Meditating it to the point where it just is. It's manifesting this way, it's manifesting that.
Mm-hmm.
It's manifesting through this Buddha body. And strengthening to know that that's possible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that way of approaching it time after time can be a vehicle for manifesting.
And that's settling into really the wholeness of our life. At the same time that we have pain, we can also experience the joy. At the same time we experience these horrible losses, we can also really settle into the relationships that are so meaningful to us, and being able to really, you know, always see the wholeness of our lives is our mountain body, is our Dharma eye, is our Bodhisattva practice. So, thank you. So maybe we can continue the discussion outside. May our practice continue to remind us of our intimate connection with all beings, with all objects, with our fences, with our footstools, with each other, and see all phenomena as the valley streams and the mountain bodies. Beings are numberless, I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible, I vow.